Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
All right, it's that time again where we have a deep conversation about an issue, and an issue that I think many of us would want to unpack. This is the Bella Act. We were speaking for a long time about the Bella Bill, lots of, you know, very, very strong opinions about it. But I think the most important thing to do right now, it's now an act. Let's unpack it. Let's go very, very slowly through it. And if you have any questions, there is no stupid question. This is a good time to ask those questions. 086-000-00959. Equal Education's General Secretary, Nonqeto Madube Dube is on the line. I hope Nonqeto can hear me. Can you hear me, Nonqeto? I think you're muting. Can you unmute yourself,
please? Yeah, I can hear you.
Can you hear me? All right. Thank you. Thank you so much for making time for us. We just really want to get a clearer sense of this Bella Act now, so that we really understand where the tensions lie and why there are tensions. Maybe let's just, you know, just to give a bit of background, it is preceded by an act that was signed into law in 1996, is it not?
So that's where I actually wanted to start as well. I wanted people to understand what we are dealing with here. Maybe we can understand some of the hysteria around this bill. So in 1996, South Africa constitutes or promulgates its first constitution in democratic South Africa. A well-known document in Section 29 of the Constitution, including the Bill of Rights, says all children living in South Africa, I hope the xenophobes can hear me, have the right to basic education. And so what we do with that is that we have to think about promulgating further laws to give implementation guidelines to the Section 29 that talks about the right to education. And so then we get in 96 as well, the South African Schools Act, SASA. 30 years into democracy, but from about 10 years from today or this period, there's been conversation around making sure that we are building an education system that is keeping up with the emergent issues of education for South Africa, but so that we can be competitive across the globe. Now we already know that our education system is struggling. It's a volatile system. 81% of children in the fourth grade can't read for meaning. There's a massive backlog of inappropriate and unsafe and undignified infrastructure in our schools. Classrooms are overcrowded. But the conditions that I'm highlighting don't exist for all public schools. These conditions exist in public schools that were previously part of the Bantu sort of geographic landscape. So while the system is under pressure, is burdened, and increasingly so with the budget cuts, we're also seeing a very unequal education system. It matches exactly the kind of society that South Africa lives in. Because there's this reckoning, Parliament, the departments of education, the ministries, together with ordinary people, civil society, join a process to amend the South African Schools Act. And it is called BELA, the Basic Education Law Act. And while this process happens, for everyone listening, when we're changing or amending a law, it goes through a laborious, very intense, comprehensive, long process of consultation across the board. So the department will table something, the ministry will present that thing to Parliament at different levels of Parliament. It goes to NCOP, comes back to Parliament. The portfolio committee spends a lot of time. So there's a portfolio committee of education. Spends a lot of time grappling with the contents of this policy. And then they run a process that's called public hearings, where they take the law and they go to people in communities and they ask you there to make submissions, oral submissions, and explain to them what parts you are finding expression in the bill, what's challenging you in your context, and so on and so forth. And they open up space also. There's like a period of time where you can also write in written submissions. And so civil society, Equal Education being one of those organizations, writes and makes comments on these Bella bills. So what we do, because we're a social movement, so we've got membership groups that consist of learners, parents, and young folks between ages 18 and 25, we take it to this this bill to them and go, have a look at what's being proposed. This would be the new law that gives life to Section 29. Are there things here about your experience of schooling that you think don't make sense or should be highlighted? And three things came up, the biggest bones of contention of the act at the moment. So one of the things that we were concerned about is that there was a narrative growing inside what was then the opposition parties in government, that this new Bella Bill was proposing a mechanism to withdraw or remove powers of school governing bodies. Now, everyone listening here will know that school governing bodies were part of the big fight of building a democratic South Africa and democratic institutions. Mm. The idea was to be able to give power to school communities to govern their own schools, set their own agendas, fundraise, build security around the school community, all of those important issues. And we are a big proponent of that kind of agency. And so when these opposition parties were saying, we find that powers have been removed, we went and had a careful analysis of this clause, which is also still up in the air, but we'll get to that just now. Mm. And what we found is that it was untrue. It is a myth that powers are being removed from school governing bodies. What the bill is proposing, remember I gave a context about an unequal education system. The bill says school governing bodies at the moment have absolute carte blanche on determining the language policy of a school. So not just which languages are offered in the school, but also the medium language of instruction. Mm-hmm. The second thing is that school governing bodies, again, absolute carte blanche on formulating the admissions policies of schools. Mm. Now, people listening in Gauteng will remember the big hoo-ha around the zoning of school admissions in Gauteng, and how the idea of opening up the zoning system was to integrate different communities into schools of choice. Mm. And schools of choice is you picking a school that has good marks, good resources, good facilities your child can go to if you can afford it. And we all need and appreciate those kinds of permissions. So what the bill was proposing, and we agree with it, so we wrote in to support it, is that school governing bodies will have to get permission or a sign off from the head of Department of Education in that province. That's the role that sits just under the executive of the MEC. So the head of department must be able to go across all schools in the province and go, okay, we agree with your preference on language policies. It makes sense for the context and the geographic area that you service. On the admissions policy, a similar process. Now, the reason that the parties in opposition in government are fighting this bill, because it means that schools in the north, northern suburbs of Cape Town can continue to only offer English or Afrikaans, regardless of where they are in the demographic, they should be able to service in that area. It means that school governing bodies will be able to say, we're capping numbers in all classrooms to 28 or 35 at absolute maximum, and that's the final word on that. And that's an access question, issue, because you've got schools in the East Rand of Gauteng that have said to their own government over the last 4 years, our schools are overcrowded. And what you're in fact doing is you're creating no space for us in the education system because you're leaving us behind. You can't do anything constructive and conducive in an overcrowded classroom. You won't be able to resolve the crisis of literacy in South Africa. Children will continue to not be able to read for meaning if their classrooms in foundation phase and across the board all the way up to about grade 10 are overcrowded in these ways. So we're saying HODs need to be able to intervene and say to schools that have smaller numbers, you'll be able to take that collective of parents and learners that are asking for admission into your school because they can afford to be here and who have interest and have made this their school of choice. And they're fighting this issue. But the myth and the narrative that's been put out there, and I'm hoping that people that are listening understand me saying, as a matter of fact, it is not true. These powers are not being taken from school governing bodies. There's a support to try and create a more transformed system that meets the needs of the times.
Got you.
If government... Go ahead.
No. I was just saying we've got you. And you were just continuing on that point. That's obviously the first contentious issue that you yourself had already seen when you were going and doing your submissions and hearing from concerned parents and schools.
So I just want to counterface this with like another layer of the story.
Yeah.
If this clause doesn't make it and stand inside the Bella Act,
yes,
inside a GNU context, we're going to have deep problems in South Africa, and not in the future, in the next financial year. Because at the moment, the amount of money allocated per head, per learner in schools is decreasing at an exponential rate.
Yeah.
Our government is choosing an austerity budgeting approach that is taking money away from social spending. So the education system is losing money. And to respond to that, what provinces have done is they've said, we're no longer able to build new schools. We're no longer able to build new classrooms. We're no longer able to purchase prefabricated classrooms as interim structures. And they are starting to retrench teachers in their thousands.
Yeah, they are saying they can no longer afford to bring on new teachers, which are so desperately needed.
Exactly. Yeah. But in some provinces, they are actually retrenching them.
Yeah.
Now, if you're trying to resolve an education system that's in crisis, and you're looking at creative ways to use the resources you've already got, you need to then open up space in schools that can afford to take on more learners and have the resourcing and have the infrastructure. And so this limits that opportunity or potential of government to make those interventions, all in the name of protecting one part of society, an already more privileged section of society. And that's why I think you're finding parties coming out quite strongly and labeling the parties that are formally in the position around protection of certain kind of privilege inside of the system. And I don't want to, people will know who these parties are, right?
Yeah.
And what these schools look like.
And to just give it more context, what this actually means is that without necessarily saying so, you can have a language policy that is exclusionary. So you may decide that, and I want to be, I want to exaggerate a little bit. We can decide that in area X, we have chosen that the community in this area, the very affluent community in this area, their children want to be taught in French because that's what they want to do. And there is this decision, and traditionally they've decided this is what we're going to do for our children. But clearly, when you look at the demographics of this country, that's not representative. And so when you keep and hold on to that policy as a school governing body, because that's just a makeup of teachers and parents and their decision as a collective, it's not the government's policy. Yeah. Then it certainly means that if I'm coming into this community and I'm non-French speaking, and I, maybe even if I am close to the school, but I want to come to the school because it's actually a brilliant school, but I want to feel included and I want to study in English or any other language that this country, any other one of the 11 languages, you are not going to be accepted because you don't speak French. In a way, then limiting the space to those only who speak French, and therefore they will have smaller classrooms. It will just be them, and by way of language, excluding everybody else who'd like to have access to the school.
Exactly. And by cutting off the potential of governments in making this intervention and the role of the HOD, it means that you are unsubscribing from progressive policies of the education system. You're then saying you don't care about the capacity norms of the education system that say there should be X numbers to teachers because you're safeguarding your own privilege. Mm. You're then saying you don't care about the interests of children and the rights of children beyond the scope of the children that you're trying to protect inside of your own cluster of privilege. And that is unconstitutional.
That's going to be interesting. It's going to be very interesting. That's one. Number two.
Number two, now when you talk to learners and they're reading this bill, parts of it talk about this idea of when you're in breach of the school code of conduct, you are then seen to be, they called it some harsh language around gross misconduct.
Mm.
And they talked about the potential and ability for the school to then expel you.
Mm.
Now, we have a sister organization called the Equal Education Law Center, mm-hmm. and we work quite closely together in communities across the country. And we've got something in the sister organization called a law clinic. So anyone that's listening here and has a concern or an issue with their child or in a school, you can reach out on social media to the Equal Education Law Center. They should be able to intervene on your behalf and support you at least. But there's a growing trend through the Law Center, but there's a growing trend through Equal Education, the organization and the movement, where parents are walking in and going, my child's been suspended or expelled, but without an appropriate disciplinary hearing or procedure. And now we're starting to see that some of the reasons for these expulsions are because children are spiritually gifted and therefore need to adorn certain things at school in conjunction with their uniform.
Mm.
And those types of things sometimes can't be compromised. Or maybe it's a religious prerogative, you know, from an Islam family needs to dress modestly in certain ways. And there are no provisions for that in the school code of conduct.
Mm.
Maybe they need to have dreadlocks. Maybe they have different forms of expression, gender, sexual expression too. They'd rather wear something that's different from what the binary genders insist on inside of the schooling environment.
Mm.
And as opposed to creating, remember now Bella's new, as opposed to creating a new act, a law for education that considers all of these social constructs and is creating a conducive and safe environment for all children, the bell is going, if you broach that code of conduct, we deal with you immediately.
Hmm.
And so then when these learners are reading this, they were going, no, but we've got so many problems with school code of conduct, and we really just do need something that feels a little bit more holistic. Can you go consult someone? Are there paraprofessionals in the sector that can help take you through psychosocial support? How do we make sure when you go through a disciplinary process, because schools don't follow this, that's just a fact.
Yeah.
How do we make sure that by the time that you're reaching a sanction, you've had someone represent your own interests and needs in that space, and that the law makes provisions quite explicitly for you to be represented and or considered outside of what the strict rules of a code of conduct are saying.
Hmm.
And we know, research shows that the punitive approaches to transgressing any kind of conduct, are ineffective. And they do, in fact, then disproportionately impact disadvantaged families. And that's where our members come from. If Mama Wang works 12 hours a day and there's a disciplinary hearing at 11, if she's not there, that process happens without any adult supervision in the room.
Mm.
And then I'm without school.
Mm.
Mm. And critics also argue that the resources of building these deep disciplinary hearings, XYZ, should probably focus on something else. Improving another part of the education system, its quality, addressing systemic issues in the system, as opposed to focusing on punishing learners on these arbitrary rules.
And expelling them, you know, obviously then just throwing away, really just getting rid of the child instead of giving the child the privilege of education, which is their constitutional right.
Exactly.
I'm going to ask that we take a quick break, Nongleto, so that we can come back and continue. We are just unpacking the 3 points that Nongleto decided, you know, stuck out really in their processes of consultation when there was the consultation process, when that was happening. And of course, these obviously have now come up again, even as the bill has now been signed into law. So we're going to unpack that. If you are unclear, please call in 086-000-0959. Send a voice note as well on 063-688-0959. There is no stupid question. We'll go through it, all of it, until we get to 10 o'clock. Thank you so much for staying with us. Equal Education General Secretary Nongleto Matubetube is on the line with us. We're just going through some of the really key points on this Bella Act and issues that have come up, as you have seen, that are, you know, that are causing tension with some of the issues. So we're on issue number 3 now. Thank you so much again, Nongleto, for taking us through this. Let's talk about the third issue that you wanted to raise.
Okay. During the break, I actually realized that there's four. But,
okay. That's fine.
Zenat coming up will be able to get on that. But let me go on three.
Yes.
Three. The parents that look at this bill with us then say, oh, we're seeing here that there's a suggestion here that if as a parent, you've got a child that is out of school, you will be jailed for a period between 6 and 12 months. Now we're concerned because the potential of a child to be out of school is a dynamic that is typically experienced and, you know, out of unforeseen circumstances in most circumstances, is a dynamic that's typically seen in black and brown children in South Africa, those that already come from ill-resourced communities. And if a child is out of school, it is probably not by the liking of their parents. And as opposed to government, like again was said, new bill should be progressive, dealing with what is happening in the context of our country now. Most unequal, growing unemployment rates, all sorts of things are happening. It should be such that government is working together in an interministerial, intergovernmental coordination, social clusters to figure out how do we support this parent and how do we support this child to make sure that the child is inside school. A suggestion at criminalizing parents, a suggestion of criminalizing black bodies as a result of not being able to access an education, which is what we want, for us seems very regressive in a new policy.
Hmm.
And so the parents have been asking for that to be struck off the law entirely because it does not service the betterment of that in community environment of those circumstances. Hmm. To layer this situation again, the urban provinces, Gauteng and the Western Cape in particular, see thousands of learners still unplaced at the beginning of each year, even up to May.
Mm.
And the governments and the education departments in those provinces will respond by going, we are simply oversubscribed. There aren't enough places for children to enter a school.
Mm.
And so if the system is burdened and isn't able to accommodate children, and we're fighting government and going, but it is a constitutional right to be there.
Mm.
And then you're announcing a national law for the education system that says when they're out of school, your parent will be entered the criminal justice system.
Mm.
It's just a cognitive dissonance.
Mm.
It's the policy that does not match the current context and environment in South Africa. And I think anything at this point that chooses criminalization as opposed to social service and support is truly regressive. And we really did want to see this bill complete, this clause of the bill completely removed because it overlooks the very complex socioeconomic factors that contribute to absenteeism, to desperate actions taken by parents to seek better opportunities for their families and children. The reasons behind why some learners are left behind, those overcrowded classrooms, for example, they'll disincentivize some learners. The fact that some learners have to walk more than 4 kilometers one way to get to school.
Mm.
All of those conditions are prevalent in our education system. It's not a wild consequence, you know. It is the daily experience, you know. No money for fees or no money for uniforms. Nowadays, they say to you, we'll keep your report until you can bring X amount of money that was a school donation. And so you can't enter the next grade. No money for stationery. LTSMs, these are learning teaching support materials, are some of the hardest hit line items in the education budget, especially in rural provinces. So typically parents are being asked, bring typed paper, bring X, Y, and Z. Parents can't afford those things. Not on a 350. Unsafe school infrastructure.
Yeah.
Some learners can't be at school because they're on their period.
Yeah.
And the long drops with no, or even if they've got flushing toilets that they hardly work, then poor dire infrastructural conditions, there are no doors, there are no sanitary pads, all of these things are recognized in the Department of Education's own policies. It's there. We know about these conditions, but they're not being practiced and not being entered into the regulations to govern the education system over this next period. And that to us is just, it's astounding. And we really do need everyone listening here, whatever happens with Bella from this point onwards, to join us if not for any other clause, at least this part of this bill. It is ridiculous.
Let's focus on your last point that you wanted to highlight.
I am concerned, and now I'm hoping everyone listening here can feel mobilized by this. I've seen it too later. I am concerned that the government of national unity has used the education portfolio as a bargaining chip.
Sure.
We're seeing a situation or circumstance where, I mean, it's not unfamiliar that government will say clause X and Y will continue to be in discussion post-signing. But this idea that it destabilizes a whole government post a very intense election in South Africa because a certain group of privileged people are not getting what they want is grossly inappropriate. When we voted in May on the 29th, we were trying to make options and choose a government that would be responsive to a country that is, I at least feel, sociopolitically unstable. And so the DA is choosing to threaten the political stability of the country to protect a very small privileged minority, the interests of those former Model C schools, which is a gross misuse of their power, especially considering that in the Western Cape, which is DA-led, they have the highest rate of children out of school in the entire country. And so it is surprising that even based on what they know in their own experience, they're spending so much time and money trying to think up litigation, panting civil society up against parents, communities, all of government, and continuing to fight the full promulgation of this act.
So very succinctly put. Thank you very, very much for unpacking all of these issues for us. We're going to continue this conversation with Section 27, but I want to thank you, Nonxeto, for making time for us, Equal Education General Secretary Nonxeto Matube-Tube, and listening in to that conversation. Just the very last bit was Zinat Suji, who is Head of Education Rights at Section 27. Zinat, thanks for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Romelo, and how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you so much for making time for us. We just wanted to your take. I mean, you're also quite active in the sector. Your take on the Bella Act now. We've had some 4 points that were highlighted by Equal Education. How do you read it?
Sure, thank you. So at Section 27, we welcome the bill, and we found it to be a real long needed long-needed development of law. This bill has seemed to be aligning a lot with the jurisprudence of our courts. As Nonxeto said earlier, it's to eradicate a lot of the historical injustices of the past and to look at transformative ways in which we could govern our schools and to ensure equality and, you know, transformed practices and governance structures. As we, you know, the bill as it stands is, we welcome many of these provisions.
Yes.
From our side, we look at some of the corporal punishment, the expansion of the definition of corporal punishment, the regulation of or the language policies, as Nonxeto mentioned earlier, admission policies. So those are what we have endorsed. But actually, the bill as a whole is really important. And if I have to take you through this, why we say, so with corporal punishment, Section 27, maybe we can start there.
Yes.
Looking at what corporal punishment and the expansion of this and what we've been advocating for is what we have seen through our cases that we've been involved in. And why, you know, if we look at, so we need to start from the onset. We know that corporal punishment was abolished, but we're still in 2024 and we're still confronted with many learners who are faced with egregious forms of corporal punishment. And what the Act's doing now is it has expanded the definition not to only be that of physical abuse of children, but you look at humiliation, verbal intimidation, anything that could be degrading to a child, because even that kind of punishments would be the impact that it has on children is it's quite, it has an adverse impact on children. And I would also like to mention a case that Section 27 were involved in recently around corporal punishment, where what had actually happened here is that we acted on behalf of the Center for Child Law and also two learners who were egregiously, parents of two learners who were egregiously beaten by their educators. And what happened is that South African Council for Educators particularly imposed quite lenient penalties, right? And we had to go to court and we had to challenge this. And at the High Court, the High Court agreed with us that the mandatory sanction policy of SACE, the South African Council for Educators, was actually quite, it needed to be revised. But it did not agree with us that those cases should be remitted to SACE for re-adjudication. We had to appeal that decision to the Supreme Court of Appeal. And at the Supreme Court of Appeal, the court actually agreed with us on both accounts. But the important thing here, and this is why it's so important, is that the court looked at how do we then ensure that there's going to be some kind of, that educators are going to be sanctioned with, that they need to ensure that they have anger management and rehabilitative sanctions. So to this day, we're still confronted with a lot of corporal punishment. And I think that this expansion will then allow learners to be a lot more protected.
Go ahead, Sina.
You can go ahead, Milo.
I just wanted to ask, having looked at the other elements in the Act now, any concerns that you have?
So with the concerns, I think the biggest one for us would be the imposition of penalties for learners who, for compulsory, who are not at school. And for us, the punitive measures that have been put in place, which would be the 12-month or 12-month imprisonment, or it's a fine, or both, even though it's done by judicial discretion, I think that could be counterproductive, because we know that in the best interest of children, we have to look at these kind of cases by case basis. We know that all learners who might not be attending school, not for reasons that could be purposeful, but for reasons that, it could be child-headed households, it could be poverty, it could be a range of reasons. And we cannot use this blanket approach of punitive measures imposed on these on parents, because it's actually not going to it's not going to be the most beneficial outcome, and punitive measures are not always the answer.
Not productive at all.
Completely.
Sina, let me just take a quick break, if you don't mind. And I'm very, very happy to look at voice notes. I'm very happy to look at your calls as well on 086-000-00959. Just a quick WhatsApp that came through. I'm a huge fan of Nonqeto. She has revitalized conversations in the education system. My question is, what will this bill change for the lives of the children you service? She's gone now, but we'll make sure that we get some response from Zenat as well. I'm sure you've been listening to some of the concerns that they have as Section 27, but also welcoming some of the elements of this this act, because from the work that they've been doing from a legal standpoint, there have been some good improvements. Yes, one or two concerns, but we'll continue this conversation. Very happy to also get questions from you. If you have any other questions, please send them through on 063-688-0959. Thank you so much for staying with us. That's looking at the Bella Act, now an act, and looking at different elements. You know that there were many, many concerns, those who are totally for it and those who are absolutely against it. We just want to tease out some of the things that people have been discussing. We just spoke to Equal Education a short while ago, and now I'm in conversation with Section 27. The Head of Education Rights at Section 27 is Zenat Suchi. Zenat, again, thank you so much for staying with us. There are other issues that I want us to just maybe hone in on, and this is one of the issues that I want us to talk about, is the issue of, from your point of view, the issue of the HOD versus the powers that have been resting with the school governing body.
Yeah, sure. So these are the very two, the two very contested clauses, and relating to language and admissions. Mm. So let's start with admissions. Admissions, and why is it so important and why we endorse, it's because of the inclusion of migrant learners in the Act. Mm. So in 2020, there was this court case brought by the Center for Child Law in the Eastern Cape. We challenged, a circular which prevented any undocumented learner from entering a school. Mm. And what the court held, it's important to understand this, right, Pamela, just before I continue, yeah. So understand this where I'm going,
yeah.
The inclusion in
yeah.
the Act.
Yeah.
So what the court decided in this was that it was actually unconstitutional not to include migrant learners within a school.
Mm.
And what it provided was very important. It said that if a learner does not have any documentation, they can then provide a sworn affidavit, which provides the details of a learner, and that would be sufficient.
Mm.
So based on that, we were, you know, migrant learners were now allowed, which was great. And what the Act now does is that it makes specific provision for migrant learners to be enrolled at schools.
Mm.
And it states that any learner, even if you do not have the required, that's what the Act says, required documentation, which includes birth certificates, visas, permits, passports, any of that. If you do not have that, you should still be enrolled at a school.
Mm.
But there's a following provision which says that the principal must then advise the parent to actually get their required documentation.
Mm.
So this is a huge development. And it's, you know, we also understand that xenophobia is quite rife in South Africa.
Yes.
And this is, and it has been playing out in our schools. So this is a really good provision, and it's a progressive provision that has now been included.
Hmm. Okay.
We also understand from admission policies that it was, and from historical injustices, that many of the schools wanted to retain a lot of privilege, have, you know, to retain who comes to the school. And now with these kind of oversights from the HOD, it allows for better guidelines on how these policies should be drafted. And what it basically says is that you need to, and this is what the Act is quite specific on. It says that the SGB is not limited, must consider, but would not be limited to the best interests of the children, which has to be considered. They have to look at whether there are other schools in the community that would be accessible to learners, whether there's available resources to the school, and whether there's available space at a particular school.
Mm.
So that's really important. And I think this is what SGBs need to consider. And this is why HODs need to have this oversight to make sure that these policies are then constitutional, that are not going to be discriminatory. And it's going to serve the community.
Mm.
The second, when we get to language, so with language, I think here again, what the Act is trying to do is that it, and here as well, gives very clear guidelines on what the SGB needs to consider, which includes the best interests of the child. It looks at the, you know, language of the broader community, which has to be taken into account, the changing number of learners who speak a particular language, classroom space and resources also at a particular school. And what SGBs need to remember is that it's not taking away the power, because again, from the Constitutional Court in Worskold Ermelo particularly, and in Rivonia,
yes,
what the courts have actually emphasized is that it's so important for HODs to have oversight to make sure that we're not going to have these discriminatory policies on language.
Mm.
And what the language policies also need to ensure that there's equality.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something called in the Constitution, which is when you're looking at language, and this is in Section 6.2 of the Constitution, which basically says it has to be reasonably practicable.
Mm.
And there's been a line of jurisprudence on where the court had to actually grapple with how, you know, if you have... and it's not sidelining a particular language.
Mm.
It's saying that if you want a second policy,
yes,
then this is where the HOD can actually consider,
yes,
looking at these factors, whether they could be allowed. So I think that there is that scope for consultation. It does not close the door to consultation. There is no explicit or a direct provision which basically says the HOD has the final say. And from the previous version of the Bella, which was the Bella Bill, and now the Act,
yeah,
the Act now has watered that down a bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
It has taken away some of the HOD's powers to say that you can come in every 6 months, or I can't. It was basically where the HOD had the power to review these policies. That has now been taken away in the Act. So they've kind of watered down the responsibility, they've watered down those obligations of the HOD. However, it's still constitutional and it still says that there has to be oversight, but it also allows for consultation. And that's still important. So and it meets the constitutional muster.
Yeah, I mean, and from what I'm hearing you say, Sunat, is that... It's all good and well that you as a school governing body and parents have these particular interests, but you do live in a country that strives to have inclusive education and a country that allows for, you know, other things to happen within it, not just to have people who are sitting in isolation making their own rules up with no oversight. And yes, it may seem to other people as, you know, too much power and too much oversight, but it should be that way, because you should also be guided by the Constitution. And I think that's the contentious issue.
Exactly. And we've seen this, Pamela. We've seen up now where we've had incidences of race, of exclusion, right? And I think that we need to allow all schools to be open to learners across a race and class. And a lot of the contestation we know is to protect the privilege.
Mm.
It's to protect the affluent. And we need to make our schools a lot more equitable for all learners,
yeah,
and to ensure that learners in the most marginalized of our communities are also going to be given and treated in the same way that our schools in affluent areas are. Mm-hmm. So I don't see this as being, you know, I think this is what we have been saying, is that these two clauses particularly, even though they are under negotiation at the moment, needs to be passed as soon as possible and implemented fully. These are the two most transformative clauses in the Act. And this is what aligns completely with with what our courts have said and with the Constitution. Mm.
Let's talk a little bit about the homeschooling, tightening of that oversight, looking closely at what actually happens within this home environment. Your sense, from a legal point, on this, the current now, what we are seeing as the act, whether it is, the, you know, in terms of the law, is it too tight? What's your feeling on that?
So on homeschooling, again, we completely welcome this. And why do we welcome it? It's because we look at a regulated framework. This is what the Act is doing.
Yes.
It is not what people, and I know that there's been a lot of misinformation around this on, oh no, this is preventing us from homeschooling our children. There's going to be a full regulation by the department. The department wants to monitor and provide further input on whether we should be homeschooling our children and provide permission for it. It's not that. What the Act is trying to do is to say, we need to protect the interests of our children. We need to ensure that they're not lost in the system. So what the Act tries to do is, not tries, what it actually does is that it regulates, it's regulating it by saying that each learner who's in a homeschool and who wants to go, who's opting for homeschooling should be registered with a particular, with a provincial education department. Mm. It then goes on to say that it has to be done within a home environment. Mm. And obviously it has to be done with a curriculum that's chosen by a parent, but not inferior to that of the public school. Mm. So you still have the choice. And the Act is also read very closely with the home education, the home education policy. And, you know, Pumelo, there was a case, and I'm going to mention this because I think the importance of regulation comes in because of my own experiences working with home education. Mm. And there was a case that we were involved in where these children were not registered with the department. But what happened is that instead of them being homeschooled at home within a home environment, they sent their children to a home center, to a tutor center, which was saying, oh, we're doing homeschooling.
Yeah, I've seen those. Yeah.
There was, and there was an incident of sexual misconduct to one of our clients that, that happened, a sexual assault. Mm. And there was no policy. So the parent comes to us and we interrogate this. And we then found out that this home center was not operating legally. Huh. There were no qualified teachers. Huh. There was no policy at all. They were not registered with the department. We then reached out to the Gauteng Department of Education, who then managed to close the school, the center. Huh. Now, all of these learners who were part, who were attending the center, were not registered with the department. So they got lost. They were lost in the system. And they now had to move into mainstream schooling, or even if they had to choose for other homeschooling options, but they had to register. Mm. And this is why we're really concerned. There has to be some kind of regulation and registration of these learners so they don't, these kind of experiences and these kind of incidences do not happen in future. And also to understand that homeschooling has to be done within the home, where a tutor comes into the home or an educator comes in the home to protect our learners. And it's actually done. And we have to remember that all of this is done in the best interest of the child in terms of the Constitution.
Really, really insightful. And thank you. Thank you so much for your contribution. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Head of Education Rights at Section 27, Zinat Tsuji. Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time. Thank you, Zinat.
Thank you, Pumelo. Thank you for having me.
All right, folks, thank you. That's kind of brings us to the end of this conversation for today. What we'll do is that we'll have part two and touch on some of the elements that we were not able to get to. I know many of you are asking, what about the grade R being compulsory? You know, I don't want to start that right now because we are running out of time. So there are many, many other things that we need to touch on. So we will have part two of this conversation, just so that we are all on the same page. But I do need to give you these details because I did promise that we will get to give you the details of Education Department in Gauteng. For those of you who are not clear, and I see some of you are saying, no, the system is saying that, you know, you did not submit anything at all, even though you did. So this is the number that you can call if you have any issues. You know, earlier on, we spoke to MEC of Education in Gauteng. They had started from Monday already sending out SMSs to parents saying, you know, your child had been accepted and so on. Yes, he's admitted that not everybody may have received an SMS, but some of you are saying, look, even as you go onto the site and to the portal, you could not find your documentation. You couldn't find your application. So the number to call is 0800 000 789. There's also a WhatsApp number. It's 060-891-0361. I'll repeat that. The number to dial on WhatsApp is 060-891-0361. That's for all the queries that you may have when it comes to your grade 1, grade 8, or you may have just sent in for what they call unique applications and you're not sure where you stand because you did not receive an SMS and you also did not find yourself on the system when you went and checked. So you can call the 0800-000-789 number or you can send a message on WhatsApp on 060-891-0361. Thanks, everybody. What we'll do is that we've already actually reached out to Nongleto, who was very insightful, and many of you want to ask other questions as well. We brought in Section 27 so that they can give us the legal framework. We'll continue this conversation next week so that we unpack other elements, you know, early childhood development centers, what does that mean? Compulsory grade R, what does that mean? All of those things. We're going to unpack them again next week. So Nongleto, we have put out that request so that we can continue and have part two of this look into the Bella Act. Thanks, everybody. I'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.